Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver, Alice Bryant, Susan Shand, and Anne Ball. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Controversy and sadness were part of this year's Grammy show before the Music Awards ceremony even began Sunday. Host Alicia Keys opened. Here we are together on music's biggest night, celebrating the artists that do it best. But to be honest with you, we are all feeling crazy sadness right now, she said. She was talking about the tragic news that basketball superstar Kobe Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter, and seven other people were killed in a helicopter crash Sunday morning. The National Recording Academy Awards show was broadcast live from the Staples Center, the home court of the Los Angeles Lakers, the team Bryant played for all of his 20-year career. "We're literally standing here heartbroken in the house that Kobe Bryant built," Keys said. The controversy clouding the ceremony was the suspension of Deborah Dugan as chief of the Recording Academy. Dugan took the leadership position in 2019, partly to deal with reports of sexism at the academy. She is the first woman to head the organization. Less than 2 weeks ago, Dugan was suspended. The academy said another employee had accused Dugan of hostile behavior. Dugan has since taken legal action herself with the Equal Opportunity Commission. But the sadness and the controversy did not stop the artists Sunday night from producing a major celebration of music. Singer and flute player Lizzo started the night's many songs with "Truth Hurts" and "'Cause I Love You." The artist won the Best Pop Solo Performance Grammy for "Truth Hurts." The big winners of the night, however, were 18-year-old Billie Eilish and her brother Finneas O'Connell. They shared the Best Album Grammy for "When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go?" Billie Eilish also took home the Best New Artist Prize, and her song "Bad Guy" won Best Song and Best Record. Finneas O'Connell won a Producer of the Year Grammy and another for Best Engineered Album. Together, the sister and brother won Best Pop Vocal Album. I'm Katie Weaver.
Zachariah Mohammed's living room is filled with things he does not own. He pays $200 a month for the couch, side table, bar cart, dining table, and four chairs in his living room. "The cost is worth it," says the 27-year-old New Yorker. Mohammed has moved two times in the past year. That is not unusual in places like New York City. If he needs to move again, he will not need to carry a couch across the city or worry about whether it will fit in his next apartment. Mohammed's solution is Feather, a new company that lets renters change furniture whenever they want. Mohammed is a social media manager who lives with his partner and their dog. He told the Associated Press, "We don't want to be stuck with a giant couch." Feather and other companies aim to rent furniture to young adults who do not want to make big purchases or move heavy furniture. It and similar companies are part of a growing rental culture. Thomas Robertson is a marketing professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He told the Associated Press that people who are using furniture rental services likely move and change jobs a lot. These companies target people who make good money, live in cities, and want nice furniture, but only temporarily. The quality of the furniture is a little higher than that of Swedish brand IKEA.
"I'm 32 years old and have lived in 25 different places, 5 different countries, 12 different cities," says Chan Park. He helped launch the online furniture rental company Oliver Space last year. Before starting the company, Chan often bought and then threw away low-cost furniture. Then he moved to a rental apartment in Singapore that already had furniture in it. "It was probably the first time in my adult life that I felt like I was truly at home," Park says. Such companies mostly only operate in a few coastal American cities. They offer furniture from Crate and Barrel, West Elm, and smaller brands. Others have begun renting home goods, too. The high-end clothing rental company Rent the Runway recently added West Elm pillows and quilts. IKEA is also testing a rental service in several countries, including Switzerland and Belgium. Renting may make sense for a generation that sees life as always moving, says Hanna Ben Shabbat. She is the founder of Gen Z Planet, a research and advisory company that studies the generation born between the late 1990s and 2016.
Moving her furniture from New York to Los Angeles would have cost Clarissa Wright $3,000. Instead, she gave away most of what she owned, traveled through Europe for 2 months, and then rented a couch, bed, and other furniture in her new place. She pays $255 a month. Feather delivered the furniture and put all the pieces together in one day. Wright is a 28-year-old marketing advisor for clothing and beauty brands. She says she can change the furniture, add more things, or move to a new apartment or city. But right now, she is not sure what her future holds. "I don't think too far ahead," she says. That comes at a price. Critics have called the furniture rental business exploitative. Stores like Rent-A-Center target poor people who cannot pay full price for furniture or home appliances. And the company charges higher prices overall than competitors. For some of the newer furniture rental companies, there are membership costs. There are also costs if furniture is badly damaged. Margot Saunders is with the National Consumer Law Center. She said If people think this is the best way to buy a couch, they are wrong. Saunders added, they should recognize that they are paying for the convenience of renting. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Susan Shand.
People who work long hours and have long commutes to their jobs may be more likely to have sleep problems and not get enough exercise, a new study suggests. Researchers in Sweden carried out the study. They looked at people who work more than 40 hours a week and commute more than half an hour each way on an average day. The researchers found that those people had a 25% higher risk for having an inactive lifestyle and a 16% higher risk of having sleep problems. Jana Halonen is the study's lead writer. She is with Stockholm University and the Finnish Institute for Health and Welfare in Helsinki, Finland. She said sleep problems may happen from lack of time for stress-releasing activities and relaxation. She also said people with long work days and a long commute may be too tired to be physically active. The study recently appeared in the publication Occupational and Environmental Medicine. In the past, researchers have linked long work hours to unhealthy behaviors like physical inactivity, smoking, and poor eating choices. However, little is known about the combined effects of working long hours and having long commutes over time. For this study, researchers questioned more than 22,000 working-age adults at least two times between 2008 and 2018. And they asked them about their work and commute hours, as well as how much they exercised and slept. The researchers also asked the study subjects how often they smoked and drank alcohol. Many of those questioned had a usual way of getting to work that remained unchanged during the study period. But 14% had commute times change once during the study, and about 5% had commute times change at least twice. Among people who normally worked less than 40 hours a week, the study found that commute time had little effect on habits, such as drinking alcohol, smoking, or exercising. The researchers did lack data on how people commuted. This makes it unclear if a commuter had an inactive method for getting to work, like driving a car, or if their commute included some form of exercise. We know walking and cycling for commuting tend to be associated with better health, said Oliver Mitten. He is a researcher at Britain's University of Cambridge and was not involved in the study. Minton told Reuters that there is clearly a message here about when choosing a job with a long commute. He said that people should think about the effects that their job situation may have on their health. Not everyone has much choice over where they work or the chance to work from home, Minton noted. But he said that this suggests there is a role for employers and governments to show flexibility to employees' needs. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States did not play a very large part in world events during the 1800s. At the beginning of the 1900s, however, it expanded its interests throughout the world. America's president at that time strongly supported the expansion. He was Theodore Roosevelt, a distantly related cousin of the future president, Franklin Roosevelt. Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver complete the story of America's 26th president, who was also known as Teddy.
Theodore Roosevelt became president in 1901, after the assassination of President William McKinley. He completed the last 3 years of McKinley's term. Then he was elected in his own right. Those 4 years are spoken of as Roosevelt's second term. It was during this second term that Roosevelt gained his most important foreign policy success. He negotiated an end to a war between Russia and Japan. Later, he was asked to settle another international dispute. At issue was Morocco.
In 1904, France and Britain signed an agreement on North Africa. The agreement gave Britain control over Egypt. It gave France responsibility for security and reforms in Morocco. Germany opposed the agreement. It felt threatened by any French-British alliance, and it feared France would block German trade ties with Morocco. Germany demanded an open-door policy that would permit all countries to trade freely in Morocco. It proposed an international conference to settle the dispute. France and Britain rejected the idea. The ruler of Germany, Kaiser Wilhelm II, warned that the dispute could lead to war. The Kaiser asked Theodore Roosevelt to intervene.
President Roosevelt agreed to help. Some American lawmakers criticized him. They said it was an American tradition not to get involved in European disputes. But Roosevelt believed peace was more important than tradition. He set up the conference in the Spanish seaport of Algeciras. 12 European nations and the United States attended. The conference agreed to an open-door trade policy in Morocco. It organized an international bank to control Morocco's finances, and it gave France and Spain almost complete control over police forces in Morocco's port cities.
Theodore Roosevelt had become a powerful world leader. At home, however, he was losing power. One reason was an economic depression. Business leaders blamed it on Roosevelt. They said it was the result of his efforts to gain government control over industry. The other reason was one he had created himself. At that time, there was no law limiting a president's term in office. But America's first president, George Washington, had established a tradition of only two terms. When Theodore Roosevelt won the election of 1904, he announced he would not be a candidate in 1908. He had completed the term of President McKinley. He would serve a full term of his own. That was enough. Later he said, "I would be willing to cut off my hand if I could call back that statement."
During his last year in office, Roosevelt was a lame duck president. Everyone knew he would not be back. There was little political reason to support him. He faced increased opposition from Congress and from his own Republican Party. His final message to Congress was extremely bitter. President Roosevelt accused Congress and the court system of working only to help rich Americans. He called for a tax on earnings. He called for legislation to give workers a greater share of the nation's wealth. The House of Representatives voted to reject the message. It said Roosevelt had failed to show respect for the legislative branch of government.
Roosevelt refused to give up hope for the policies he believed America needed. He would not be able to fight for these policies himself, but he could find a presidential candidate who would. He was sure the people would vote for his choice. He decided on his close friend, Secretary of War William Howard Taft. Taft had spent most of his life in government service. He had been a judge in both a state court and a federal court. He had been a lawyer in the Justice Department. And he had been governor of the Philippines.
There was one problem, however. Taft did not want to be president. He really wanted to be Chief Justice of the United States. But there were no immediate openings on the Supreme Court. Also, his wife, his brothers, and his good friend, Theodore Roosevelt, urged him to run. So Taft agreed to be a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 1908. When he won the nomination, Taft said, "Mr. Roosevelt led the way to reform. My job, if elected, will be to complete and perfect his programs." The Democratic Party nominated William Jennings Bryan. Bryan had been a candidate two times before without success.
The presidential campaign was not especially exciting. William Howard Taft did not like being on the campaign trail. He was a big, heavy man. He did not like to travel. Roosevelt urged him to campaign with more energy. "Hit hard, old man," Roosevelt said. Make the people see the truth. Let them know that, for all your gentleness and kindliness, there never existed a man who was a better fighter when the need arose. Roosevelt's advice and strong support helped Taft win a big victory on Election Day.
A few weeks after Taft was sworn in as president, Roosevelt left on a year-long trip overseas. He spent most of the time hunting wild animals in Africa. President Taft wrote a warm goodbye letter to his friend. He promised to do his best as president. But he admitted he could not lead as Roosevelt had done. In fact, Taft said, he was still surprised when anyone called him Mr. President. Each time it happened, he turned around to see if Roosevelt was there.
There was no question that Taft's way of leading was much different from Roosevelt's. Taft believed a president should not interfere too deeply in the actions of Congress. He also believed a president should not claim special powers or rights. He believed in the supreme power of the law, even if the law did not work very well. The progressives who had supported Roosevelt did not support Taft. They said he was too friendly with conservatives. They said he had surrendered to special interest groups. Taft, for his part, did not like progressives. He thought they were too emotional and extreme.
Yet Taft worked hard to put into law many parts of Roosevelt's progressive programs. He was successful in several areas. During his administration, for example, a separate Department of Labor was established. Two constitutional amendments won congressional approval and were sent to the states for ratification. One amendment provided for a federal tax on earnings. The other provided for direct popular election of senators. Taft also worked even harder than Roosevelt to break up companies or trusts that blocked economic competition.
At the same time, Taft failed in several areas. He signed legislation that lowered import taxes. Neither businessmen nor progressive Republicans liked it. He negotiated a free trade agreement with Canada. The Canadian Parliament rejected it. He believed in protecting America's wilderness areas. Yet, he did not believe existing laws gave him the right to close public lands to private development. So he was seen as an enemy of conservation. These struggles and failures made Taft's 4 years as president the unhappiest of his life.
The final blow came in an effort to reduce the powers of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The Speaker was a conservative Republican. Progressive Republicans opposed him. The issue split the party. Theodore Roosevelt, far from home, read about the trouble. He had promised to stay out of politics. But each of the opposing groups in his party had asked for his support.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.